This talk is a continuation of what I did last night for the monks. One way in which we can characterize the dilemma that we often encounter, sometimes encounter in training, or characterize it very simply, is like this: that seems like in order for some of the deepest karmic jangles in our spiritual makeup to get the help they need, they got to find their way to the surface, so to speak. When they find their way to the surface, we feel very, very strongly. Another way to put this is that feeling is the reaper of karma. The final reaping of karma has to take place. So this happens in the context of the effort to cleanse and convert the karma, the effort to do training, which is, to put it another way, to cleanse and convert the karma. And so we're faced with the paradox at certain, especially at certain key points, we're faced with the paradox that in order to cleanse and convert the karma, we run the risk of getting swept away by it because it comes up so powerfully. Does that ring any bells with anyone, I wonder? See. And there are certain periods in which, for each of us, this is particularly, the risk of this getting swept away is particularly powerful. Sometimes it's in monastic communities or in sanghas, we go through this together. When you might begin characterize it as a lot of karma coming due, and correspondingly the opportunity for a lot of cleanup to happen. So it can happen with individuals at times when it doesn't seem to be happening so much within an entire sangha. It can happen with whole monasteries, monasteries and their lay congregations, whole sanghas can happen. And things can obviously get wild at such a time. At least in our private life, our feelings can run very, very powerful and we can have some pretty wild thoughts. Anywhere from I want to get the hell out of here as fast as I can to I'm going to murder that guy if he opens his mouth one more time, you see, or even looks at me, you see. And you can't ever rule out the possibility that either one of those things can happen. And a lot of other things, and sometimes they do happen. There's just no getting around it. Some really ugly things do happen at such a time sometimes. So obviously, we don't want to be selfish, but we'd kind of rather it happen to someone other than ourselves. If it's got to happen, perhaps that's not the absolutely ideal way to put it. But we'd rather be able to swim than sink in the karmic mire. Let's put it that way. And my talk last night was really about this. So if people haven't heard that talk, I really recommend it. It's one of these talks where it's in the meditation hall, and it's kind of really coming out of my meditation, and it progresses, I think, pretty darn slowly. There's some very big spaces in there. Kind of some of these slow motion talks. But I thought when I came out of there, that was actually a pretty important talk. And it got some points in there that can easily be missed. You can oversimplify the process and that addressed some of the complexities of the process. So I want to address some other complexities today while keeping this kind of simple overview. We want to clean up the karma. At times to do that, the karma's got to come up. Oops, this is difficult. That's the thumbnail version of it here. Last night I talked about the importance of self-forgiveness. Today I want to emphasize the importance of faith. And, well, this is not a new topic, is it? One thing that puts me in mind for this is a conversation that Master Moksha and I had yesterday. She made a very good point. We often emphasize faith in the teacher, faith in the master, and it certainly is vitally important, especially when one's going through one of these really rough times. And at the same time, it's easy to forget that faith in your master is really the same as faith in yourself, because after all, something drew you to your master. Something drew you to ask to be a disciple. At some point, are we just going to write that off and say, I was just misguided in that? Or are we going to trust that deep intuitive thing that drew us? And that was a point Master Moksha made, and it's an absolutely essential point. I mean, that is such an important point. You really can't separate your trust in yourself from your trust in your master. And you can't separate your trust in yourself and your trust in your master from the trust from just trust. Trust can't be chopped up easily. And trust can't be compartmentalized. And this is something I want to emphasize in this talk, is that one of the ways we try to cope with the problem of doubt, and one of the key things that arises when a key feature of the karmic jangles, the big ones working their surface, is big doubt coming up. And remember that big doubt can come up sometimes in some rather subtle ways. Just in seeing something a little bit off center and misinterpreting people's motives and circumstances and the like. Not seeing the Buddha in things and going with a more externalized and worldly point of view can be a big step into doubt, and often is. But one of the things when doubt is coming up that we sometimes try to do is we try to put a little box around it. Like you can do with some of these tools on a computer where you can use a little select tool or a little cropping or snipping tool or something. You can put a little box around it and then you can push delete or something and it vanishes. Sometimes we try to put a little box around faith and say that within this box or outside this box, you can think of it either way, that's what I can trust. But that which is in this box or outside this box, I can't really trust that, you see. Now here's the thing, at one level or another that may or may not be true, but the problem is we're being too clever there. And whenever we get clever in religion, we trip ourselves eventually. You can just treat this as a universal principle of religion. When you get clever, eventually you're going to trip over the wire that you yourself put up when you were being clever. I just promise you that. I guarantee it 100%. I've done it myself. I've proved it true. I've seen other people do it. When you don't create your own trip wire and then catapult yourself into the abyss. You can't compartmentalize trust. You can't protect yourself from doubt Oh, there's a hummingbird. How did that current out there? That's the first hummingbird I've seen this year. Other people have seen them, but I haven't seen them. Spring. You know, spring. Anyway, it won't work to do that, take that approach to doubt, the compartmentalizing. You can see why we do it, though, and I just want to say a few words about why we do it, why we would do it. Because we know we got to hang on to our faith. We know we got to hang on to our faith. And we know that it's for dear life we've got to hang on to faith. But some aspect of doubt is so convincing, and we feel ourselves spiraling into such a dark place when that comes up, that, you know, the particular focus or object of that doubt, we will put a box around and say, well, at least this person or these conditions I can't trust, but I'll trust everything else, you see. And the problem with that, of course, is that, you know, it's the universe is so created that that particular thing we've got in the box there that we won't trust is the one that's going to be in our face all the time then, you see. And in a way, we call that, if we do that as a deliberate act, we do that mental act of compartmentalizing like that, then we set that in motion with an extra oomph. Because the eternal, you could say, ultimately you go traces back to the eternal, the eternal is going to make sure that we realize the perfection of Zen eventually. And the perfection of Zen doesn't have that kind of compartmentalizing, because everything has a Buddha nature. Everyone has a Buddha nature, and all circumstances have the Buddha nature, and we can't get away from it. No matter how difficult the struggle is going to be to actually realize it. So, if there is or are, if there is such a focus or there are such foci of our doubt, how can we handle it without the compartmentalizing? How can we handle it without the compartmentalizing? So, once if we're doing that compartmentalizing, we're already a few steps down, and that's, and because it takes you a few steps to be that clever. So the first thing you do is take a few steps back and go back to, well, what is the basic principle of what we're doing? All acceptance, bowing, being still. All acceptance, bowing, being still. Go back to that place. Then what can you do? You know, it's said in the rules for meditation, if your first step is false, you'll immediately stumble. Well, if your first step is right, then you won't immediately stumble. And so, what's a first right step? We talk about it all the time. I talk about it all the time. Our master talks all about the time, about it all the time. This is the step you take where you're not being clever, and you know you're not going to be clever. You know you're not clever. To ask for help. If you're too clever to ask for help, you're in trouble. Just turn to the eternal. Say, I don't see the Buddha in this. I can't get it. I cannot get it. I don't see the Buddha in it. I'm feeling torn in two. Please help. And don't nag. Don't go on yelling help. You know, it just takes one good help like that. Then sit with it and cook it spiritually. Sit with it and cook it down in your aura. That asking for help every true asking is answered, and that'll help you get out of the head, which is where the cleverness is. Get out of your emotions, get underneath the emotions. Thoughts will continue, emotions will continue. You get down underneath both, take refuge down in the hara. Take refuge down in the hara, down in the place of stillness within yourself. Take refuge in that place. And there, look up. So, ask for help, withdraw within, look up. That's not some magic eraser that will just wipe away the problem. Well, sometimes when all conditions have ripened fully, and that happens in a really big way, well, it actually does. It is like the magic eraser. And we generally call that a kensho. But most of the time, it's not that kind of flash of lightning kind of event. And we have to live with the confusion and the doubt for a while, sometime for a good while. Well, that particular karmic mess that it originates from is getting work done through the meditation. Sometimes the help of the eternal rushes in like a great kind of tidal wave. Sometimes it seeps in gradually like you're leaking roof, drip by drip kind of onto it. You're going to trade, if you don't do the compartmentalizing thing, then you trade the feeling of safety that gives you for a feeling of greater risk and often bewilderment and confusion. You just because you haven't got that kind of neat little box that you can kind of try to make your refuge. On the other hand, because it's going to trip you up so bad if you stick with it, it's better to live with the higher sense of risk and bewilderment for a while than just feeling confused. When someone's going through that in the monastery, I mean, what's the obvious thing? Get in more meditation. Get in more meditation. Help yourself keep your grounding. In the world, same thing, really. You need to get in more meditation. Use every opportunity to be still, to get recentered. You got to raise yourself by your own bootstraps initially. But all the heavy lifting in the end will be done by the eternal. What is the price we pay if we don't get it right? We'll never really trust our own heart. We'll always have a sense we don't quite know what our own heart even is. You can't trust your own heart if you can't trust others. You can't trust others if you can't trust your own heart. It's just the Buddha nature can't be carved up into self and other. This is not to say that one should be childishly trusting of others. One has to trust when one is an adult, one is responsible for trusting as an adult trusts. In wise ways. sometimes one needs a lot of meditation to discern how best to trust in these circumstances with this individual or this group of people. And when one does it right, one always finds that somehow the cloth remained whole and not cut up. And somehow the fundamental trust is there, even if on the surface sometimes it doesn't appear to be. I mean, if someone's on a rampage murdering people, you don't trust them by giving them a gun. You see. You trust them by stopping them from what they're doing, if at all possible, and then by not trying to wreak vengeance on them. We try to do that, which actually helps them find their way to a better spiritual place. When we blame or condemn, we again take the old scissors and try to cut up trust. That doesn't work. And if we do it with others, we'll do it with ourselves. Hey, Buddha, Dharma.